Last evening, my new bride of 26 and a half years decided she wanted an ice cream cone right in the middle of the rainstorm. Being a young man as I am, why, I drove down to get one, and I noticed the brakes going down, and I said, something is wrong with my brakes. They're going to go out or something. When I got down, I noticed that my mind wasn't exactly right, and I hadn't taken off the emergency brake. And so when I got out of the car, why, I just stepped out on the ground and pulled a ligament in the back of my knee, and it's been painful ever since. And so if you're wondering why all of that happens, young people, it says in Ecclesiastes 12:1, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth, before the evil days come and the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. So it does take effect upon both mind and body as the years do draw nigh. Now, last Lord's Day, we were talking about the youth and what they were supposed to do. We stated that now then, we're ready to move on into chapter 12 and in verse 2, where it gives a description of an older person. Now, right here, I'm going to stop for just a little while this morning, and we want to turn to another book and continue our study, though, in the subject of youth for a little while. I want you to turn this morning to the Song of Solomon, where today we will continue the study about how youth ought to live. Now remember in our series that we are entitling Living So That We Can Die, we need to understand that every individual that lives upon the face of the earth goes through certain stages of life. And in all of these stages of life, there are certain dangers, there are certain pitfalls that we need to watch for. There are certain things that are good and there are certain things that are bad. But regardless of what we're doing, we need to understand that we need to live so we can die. Now, as we last week were studying about the youth and how God tells them to live, I thought that it would be good for us to go ahead and study now a little bit more about the young people. Because I find myself getting into various series of lessons, and it's pretty hard to stop at certain times and talk to the youth. But it is needful for us to do this. In fact, we ought to do it every year, or a maximum of every 2 years. We ought to study the Song of Solomon. Because the Song of Solomon is a song that gives instructions to young people in the days of which they will need it. Now, the Song of Solomon is a love story, and it is dealing with mating love. The love that a boy has for a girl, or the love that a girl has for a boy. Now, there is no time in an individual's life when they need proper instruction concerning this than in the days of their youth. Now, we spend a lot of time talking about marriage. We spend a lot of time talking about how to be a good husband and how to be a good wife. The Bible has a great deal to say concerning this subject, but really very little is said on the subject of courtship. Now, when you turn to the Song of Solomon, that book is dealing with courtship. It is dealing with God's endorsement of a young boy and a young girl falling in love and how they ought to conduct themselves. And so, then, we're going to just stop really in our series here in Living So We Can Die. And rather than following down in Ecclesiastes and going into the age people, we're going to stop for the next 2 weeks, for this morning and the following 2 Sunday mornings, and we will be studying then the book of the Song of Solomon. Now, as we study this book, again, it is a book that is very seldom studied until people are married, and then they find that really perhaps they are not in love, and the problems come into their life. Now, when it ought to be studied, though, is really before we enter into that marriage relationship. Now, also, let me say this. For those of us who are married, the Song of Solomon is telling us about how God wants and desires mating love. And it ought to be that kind of love that brought a man and a woman together. And if your marriage is cold, if your marriage is a marriage that is having some problems, perhaps it is because you have let the flame of mating love die down. And so we all ought to take this to heart and really understand what the Song of Solomon is all about. Now, as we start in the Song of Solomon, if you have never studied this book, and you have just glanced at it very briefly, maybe once or twice in your life, you probably came down to some points in here that looked as though that they were points of vulgarity. But we're going to see that in the Song of Solomon, there really is no vulgarity at all implied within it, but it is totally pure all the way through. And it is a book that enhances courtship. It enhances a young boy and a young girl falling madly in love, not the kind of love that you would have for your enemy, but falling madly in love, and it would be the kind of love that we would call the love of courtship or mating love. Now, what really God does in giving us the book that is called the Song of Solomon is that it is a story that Solomon has had really happen to him. Something that happened to Solomon, and Solomon then, in his great wisdom, sat down one day and recorded this event because it was a pure and an exact replica of what God wants in mating love. It is called the Song of Solomon because if you have your Bibles and you open it there, you will notice the whole book is written in lyrics. It is written as though it is a poem or as though it is a song. And perhaps it was written so that it might be sung or that it might be used as a play. Now, as we look at this book, we need to look at it really as a play. Unless you understand that the book is a song or it is a book of poetry, it is a book that is to be written, that was written so that it could be acted out. Now, unless we understand that, we miss the whole point. There's no way in the world you can sit down and just start reading and just think, well, I'm going to read 10 verses and understand what it says. You have to take the play as a whole. Now, let me give you the background of this. And as we go through the book, then you will begin to see that it starts to develop in this way. And you just stay with me here as I begin to point these things out. And by next week, you'll begin to understand that this is the way, really, that the book does fall in place. All right, now, what really happened was this, that Solomon, in all of his kingly glory, was beginning to amaze a great harem. Now, this was back in his younger days, and he had not gotten a great many of his harem together yet, all of those 1,000 women that he one day had accomplished. But at this point, he has a little over 100 of them. Now, while he's out traveling, he takes some of these girls along with him. Now, he takes a plurality of them, a number of them, and they are known, really, as Solomon's court. So these young gals that were taken along with him, they were the choice, really, of Solomon's lovers. All right, now, Solomon has gone off on a trip. He is a king over the whole country, and he has gone up into the country of Issachar. And while he's up there, driving along one day, he looked out and he saw a little girl. Now, by a little girl, I suppose 18 to 25 somewhere, a girl in her youth, a young girl that had flowered out maturely, and she is a beautiful young girl in her physical looks. She is something that when Solomon sees her, she's out dancing in the field. Now, we'll see why that I know these things a little bit later on. It's not because I have any supernatural knowledge. It's just that we're going to read that this is the way it was when we get over to the end of the book. This girl is going to tell us all of these things herself. Now, she was out dancing in the field, and Solomon looked out, and Solomon saw her. Now, she doesn't tell us how Solomon got her up into his car of state, or this fine carriage that people would have been carrying along that was all decked out in its gold and silver and all of its satins and so forth. But somehow or another, Solomon enticed her to come along with him, and he did it before she realized what she was doing. So it would be something of this nature, that Solomon looked out and saw her dancing in the field. And as he saw her dancing in this field, he was enhanced with her beauty. So he stopped and he called her over. Now, you young girls can put yourself in a place here that if all of a sudden you were out here in the country somewhere dancing in a field and you looked up and Jimmy Carter's limousine came by with all the entourage, with all of the protective agents, with everything about it, all the color,
Why, that would impress you. You would look up and you would see Jimmy Carter's limousine coming down the road. And then suppose that Jimmy Carter stopped and called somebody over to you and asked you to come over for just a moment. That Jimmy Carter wants to talk with you. Now you would just be flattered. You would come running over. You would be thinking, oh, what a great honor this is. And now, what would you do if President Carter told you that you were the most beautiful young girl that he has ever seen in all of his travels, and he would just be honored if you would get in his car and just ride up the road for a little ways? Now, probably you'd jump in. Now, somehow or another, something like this happened to this young girl. So she jumps in there, and she's riding along with Solomon. And then in a little while, she realizes what has happened. She has been entrapped. Solomon is taking her back to make her another one of his lovers. He is taking her back and going to put her into this court of women that already 100 and some of them out there, and he now is going to make her another one of these girls. Now the problem with this is that this girl was madly in love with her little country boy back home. There was a shepherd boy. The only thing that this shepherd boy knew how to do was to herd sheep. He would get up every day and herd the sheep out where the green grass was, watch the sheep and make sure that they got the water, and then bring them home that night. Now that's all that that country boy was capable of doing. And she was madly in love with him. And she was out in the country dancing in the field. And now then all of a sudden, she has the option of becoming the honored wife of King Solomon. He's going to take her back home. He's going to take her out of the country and take her back to his great throne. She's going to have access to all of the mansion of the king's house. She's going to be given all of the gold and all the jewelry and silver that a man can heap upon a woman. She's going to be given all of these things. And now then, she has a problem. She has the problem of this sensual love. Solomon is desiring her. Solomon is wanting this girl more than he wants any other girl that he has ever seen. He just has to have her because of her great beauty. And he is again going to reward her by giving her a worldly gain that the world has never known before. But this little girl has a problem. She is madly in love with her little country boy back home. That fellow back there that can't give her anything. He can't give her any gold. He can't give her any silver. There's nothing that he can give her except himself. The only thing in the world that he can do is just be with her. And just say, here I am, and I will give you the pleasure of living with me. That really is all that little fella really has to offer. And Solomon has everything else. Now then, we have a love triangle. We have a young girl, and we have two boys, two men that are madly in love with her. The little shepherd boy that can't offer her anything of material benefit, and King Solomon that can offer her the entire world. Doesn't make any difference what she wants, he can give it to her. And here now is this little girl, and she is drawn between these two great forces. Now, what will win out? Which will win? How should she react? What will she do? When she has this opportunity of having all of this earthly gain, or on the other hand, of having this thing that is called mating love, of where she and her country boy, who is a shepherd boy, is madly in love. Why, now with all of this, just imagine that if you were going over now to the Colosseum to see a play. And I have come out and I have introduced the play. And I have told you what the play is going to be about. Now then, as we start reading, you're going to have to visualize yourself these scenes that are going on. You're going to have to understand now that there's going to be different people that are going to be doing the talking. Now, again, I'm going to tell you who's talking. And for a little while, you're not going to understand how I know that. In a little while, it will start to fall in, and you'll see how I know that. But the way I know it, really, is this. That in the original language, Solomon, when he's talking, He talks in a high court type of language. His language is of the highest elocution. But when this little girl talks, she is talking in real rustic country type Hebrew. Now, you've heard people talk from Washington or Boston, and then you've heard some of these southern girls talk, where they talk and sing country music. And there's a vast difference in the way they talk. All right, now, that distinction is there. Then another distinction is where there's going to be some people say we, and there's going to be the I's, and we're going to be able to tell by all of these things, these pronouns and so forth. All right, now, what we have is going to be this. We're going to have the shepherd boy, who we will not meet today. It'll be later on in our series. And then we're going to have this little girl. We're going to have Solomon. And we're going to have the court, Solomon's court, which is composed of all of these other girls. Now, to start with, we're going to have this little girl, this country girl. She's already been whisked away. She's already been taken over and put in the court with these other girls. And that's where the play opens up. So if you will imagine now, this little girl out here in the court with these other girls, and here's the way that it goes. It says, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. That's the announcement. Now the curtain opens. And what the girl is saying, this little country girl says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Now she's talking about her country boy. Now she is riding along, and she has her mind back on him. And she's thinking about him instead of all of this great grandeur that's around her, and how sweet it would be if only he could take her and he could kiss her instead of Solomon. All right, now the girls jump in. These other girls, they're going to try to comfort this little country girl now and tell her what a good deal she's got. They say, for thy love is better than wine. Thine oils have a goodly fragrance. Thy name is as oil poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. That's all of us girls. We all love thee. So they said, draw me. We will run after thee. In other words, they're telling her, little girl, you are so beautiful. You are so pretty. You have everything going for you. You even have us on your side. Why, they can see that this is going to develop into the greatest love story that was ever told. The love story between the greatest king, Solomon, and the most beautiful girl, this little country girl. All right? Then this little girl pipes in when they're telling her what a good deal she's got. And she says, the king hath brought me into his chambers. In other words, she doesn't like it. The king has brought me in here. I didn't come in here by my own volition. The court comes back and says, we will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will make mention of thy love more than of wine. Rightly do they love thee. So these other girls say, oh, honey, you're the luckiest girl in the world that King Solomon has done this. Why, your love affair with him is going to be a love affair that will be told throughout all history. All of us will be talking about the great love affair that you're going to have. Then the little girl comes back. She says, I am black but comely. Now, black, as we're going to see in just a moment, she was dark, she was suntanned, and we'll see why. So says, I'm black but comely. That is, I admit I'm a pretty good looking girl. Oh, ye daughters of Jerusalem, ask the tents of Kedar. In other words, I'm as black as Kedar. Ask the curtains of Solomon. Look not upon me because I am swarthy, because the sun has scorched me. My mother's sons were incensed against me. They made me keepers of the vineyards, but my own vineyard have I not kept. So now she says here, I've got a predicament. And young ladies, you see, she's got the same predicament, all of you understand. Back in those days, being outdoors was not really the most elite thing that you could possibly do. If you were outdoors, working outdoors, and had a real dark suntan, that meant you were poor. It meant that you had to work out there on a farm outdoors. Now, if you're really with it, if you had a lot of money, If you were an uptown girl, it meant that daddy had a lot of money, you didn't have to work outdoors, sun never hit your face, and so you're just as white as a sheet. Now, white was pretty then. Now, today, girls would jump on an airplane, go to Hawaii to get a suntan, because the thing has just turned around. But what we're getting at, really, is this, that she says, oh, I'm not pretty at all. I said, my brothers got mad at me, I don't know. She doesn't say why. And they made me go out and keep the vineyard. They forced me to go outdoors and to keep the vineyard. But she says, my own vineyard have I not kept. My own body I've not kept. My skin isn't the right complexion. My hair's messed up. And I just haven't kept myself. And then said, tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth. Now this is the girl, the little girl. She now is turning to her country boy. Now he's not there. But she's her heart is turning there. And she's crying out for it. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest thy flock, where thou makest it to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that is veiled beside the flocks of thy companions? In other words, as she's riding along in Solomon's great car, she's wondering where her sweetheart is with his sheep. I wonder where you're watering them about now. I wonder what you're doing back over there. So her heart is back with her lover that is not able to give her anything except himself. Now the girls, when they see this, they're kind of disgusted at her. Here's a girl that has an opportunity to give up an old country boy that can't give her anything and have the greatest love affair with the king that man and woman has ever had. They're kind of disgusted. They said, well, if thou know not, O thou fair among women, go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock and feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tent. In other words, I think this is just a term of disgust. They know she can't go. She's captive. She's been taken captive. And they're saying, well, look, if you can't get that knothead out of your mind, if you can't get that poor old country boy out of your mind, why don't you just go on back and see where he is? Why don't you go back and see where he's feeding the sheep? If you want to give up a good thing, why don't you go? Well, she can't go. All right, now Solomon comes in. In all of this, we see that this young girl's heart is back with her lover back there. But Solomon comes in. He said, I have compared thee, O my love, to a steed that's a stallion in Pharaoh's chariots. Now, I want you to notice the two ways that this is taking place. And first of all, girls, I want you to notice that boys have always given girls lines. I want you to notice that. And the next time that a boy gets you out and starts telling you all of these good things, don't you be so naive as to think that you're the first girl that ever heard that. I'll tell you a secret you might not know. I even gave my wife some lines. No, there's not been a man that's ever lived that hasn't lied to some girls. All men are liars. Just mark it down. And especially between about 16 and 25. Not a good one in the bunch. All men are going to feed you what's called a lie. Now, Solomon is feeding her a lie. He's going to be telling her some things. Now, I want you to notice the difference. He's talking the only way he can talk. But he's not talking her language. He brings her in and here's a little country girl. She's infatuated with country life. And all Solomon knows are all the great things. Why, the thing that has impressed Solomon more than any other thing are those great stallions that the Egyptians have bred. And with a bowed neck and powerful and snorting air and all of that great horse flesh. And so when he comes in, he tells her, I have compared thee, O my love, to a stallion in Pharaoh's chariots. That doesn't make much time with this little girl. She's not interested in stallions and Pharaoh's chariots. She'd never been to town. She'd never seen these things. Solomon's talking a different language. He said, thy cheeks are comely with plaits of hair, thy neck with strings of jewels. We will make thee plaits of gold with studs of silver. Now, gals, how would you like to hear that? Here's a man that says, oh, your beautiful neck looks so pretty. It looks so pretty with a necklace on it. And I tell you what, we'll make thee plaits of gold and stud them with silver. The most precious things that you can have, I'll give to you. Now, then the girl comes back in verse 12. While the king sat at his table, my spikenard sent forth its fragrance. Now, spikenard is perfume, and that's the boy that's back home. My spikenard, my boy, sent forth its fragrance. My beloved is unto me as a bundle of myrrh that lieth betwixt my breast. Now, right here's the first thing that we might take into consideration. You get down there, and some people say, see, there we're getting into the sexy part. Well, we're not at all. Here's a young girl, and this young girl has has had a pass made at her. Solomon has said, "Oh, darling, your neck is so beautiful, I'll deck your neck out with silver and gold." And she says, "But I smell my fragrance from elsewhere." And said, "My lover is just like myrrh that's hanging around my neck and down between my breast." This is a necklace that the girl has on her body that she doesn't really have, but she's saying, "But my boyfriend is so close to my heart that it's as though that I had a necklace around my neck, hanging down between my breast, and on this necklace was perfume, and it would be there where I could always smell it. That's how my love is for my boy back there. My love never dwindles. My love for him is constant in my mind, as perfume would be in my nostrils. My beloved is unto me as a cluster of henna flowers in the vineyards of En-Gedi." Now Solomon comes back to try to overcome this lovesick girl. "Behold, thou art fair, my love. Oh, how beautiful you are. Behold, thou art fair. Thine eyes are as doves. Behold, thou art fair, my let's stop right here. Thine eyes are as doves." All you girls have had boys to tell you how pretty your eyes are, haven't you? Solomon was telling him, "Your eyes are as doves, the most beautiful bird." Now, right in the middle of this, if you can picture this play of Solomon perhaps down on his knees and begging this beautiful young girl and telling this lovesick young girl how beautiful you are, that you are so beautiful. Your eyes are like doves. Now, in verse 16, this girl butts right into Solomon and she says, "Behold, thou art fair, my beloved, yea, pleasant." Now, she's talking about her boyfriend back home. See? She's telling Solomon, "Behold, my boyfriend back there, he's fair and pleasant. Also, our couch is green. The beams of our house are cedar, and our rafters are firs. I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valley." Now, let's go back and put this in context. Solomon has her in the surroundings of all of this beautiful riches. And this little girl is having these passes made at her. And right in the middle of it, she says, "But I can just smell my boyfriend. And he is so fair. He's so handsome. And beloved, and our couch is green." Now, that's the grass. See, I go out to see him while he's herding sheep. I'm not sitting on a satin couch like I am right here that Solomon can give me. But our couch is green. It's the green grass. And the beams of our house are cedars. That is, we're sitting on green grass under a cedar tree out in the woods. And our rafters are firs. She said, "That's where I'd rather be. I'd rather be sitting under a tree on the ground with my boy back home than I would with all the splendor and gold and silver sitting on this satin couch listening to you feed me these lines." Now, this girl is madly in love. She said, "I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valley." Now, there's a song, "I Am a Rose of Sharon," and people have misunderstood a lot of times, thinking this is talking about Christ. This has nothing to do with Christ. That song, "I'm a Rose of Sharon," has nothing to do with Christ. If you want to sing it, at poetical, with poetical license, talking about how beautiful Christ is, fine. But it was taken from this, and it's just a total misnomer. What she's saying is, she's saying, "I am a Rose of Sharon." Now, Sharon was a valley. It was a country. And she said, "I'm just a little country girl. I'm just like a rose that's been picked out in the country. That's what I am. I'm a lily of the valley. If you want to tell me I'm pretty, Solomon, that's okay. I'll accept your compliments. But let me tell you how I am. If I'm pretty like a rose, I'm a country rose. I'm a rose that's been picked out in the field. And I'm a lily of the valley. I'm not a city girl. I don't have all of this thing here that you are offering me." All right, Solomon comes back. When she says, "A lily of the valley," he says, "As a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters." Now think about that moment. He butts in. He sees a good place to give his lines again. He says, "Oh, I admit you're a lily, but you are as a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. Now all the women that I love, all the women that I know, they're just like a bunch of thorns in comparison to you. You're a lily, and they're a thorn bush." Gals, haven't you been told that? Haven't you been told how much more beautiful you are than all the other women in all the world? Now, if it comes from the right guy and he really feels that way, fine. But you be careful. And we're seeing a triangle here of where he is trying to woo her in every way that he can. And so she comes back. And she stops him right there. She says, instead of talking about her, and her being so beautiful, she says, as the apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. Now, if you're driving up over the mountains and you're looking out at all the green trees, and there's one apple tree out on the side of the mountain, out of 100,000 big firs, that one apple tree will shine up because it has its white blossoms. And that's what she's saying. She's saying, Solomon, if you think that I'm a lily among the thorns of all other women, let me tell you that my lover back home is as an apple tree among all the firs back there. There's nothing like him. If you think that there's nothing like me, you haven't seen anything like my lover back home. And by lover, I'm not talking about immoral lover. I'm talking about a young girl that is madly in love with her boyfriend. That's all I'm talking about. She's madly in love with him. There is something there that cannot be cut, as we will see later on. All right, she said, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Stay me with the raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am sick from love. His left hand is under my head, and his right doth embrace me. So she says he's the most special man I've ever seen. And if I could just be out there, she starts talking to him. Take me to thy banqueting. Now Solomon has fresh fruit and everything brought to him all the time. Remember, Solomon was so rich that Solomon, before the days of ice and refrigeration, he had slaves to carry snow down from the mountain so he could have ice water. Solomon had banquets like nobody ever knew. She said, but the banquet I want is for my lover to take me out in the field and sit down under the trees and go over and pick some old dried grapes, some raisins, and maybe find an apple and bring to me. And I could eat an apple and some dried grapes with him at the noon hour. And I'd rather do that as have all the pleasures that Solomon, you can offer me. Now this right here teaches something. In mating love, money's not the key. It doesn't make any difference how much money you've got. You don't have to go out and young boys, and throw all your money away on girls. Girls, you don't have to go out and spend all that you've got trying to impress the boys. Whenever the right one comes along, money doesn't make any difference. Whenever you are totally, completely in love, and it's not just a sexual affair, a fling of the night that you're going to have, but I mean when you're totally in love, you'd rather sit and share a milkshake with the fellow you're in love with than to go around the world on a love boat cruise with a man that you're not in love with. Now this is the thing that he's trying to get across of what true mating love really is. Now the girls, here, the girl comes back. And she said, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose of the hinds of the field. In other words, I'm putting you under oath, girls, that you stir not up nor awake love until it please. Now again, here we have to make a little correction, a little statement in here. It says, until he please. Now, this will show those of you in our spatial Greek class that little things can help a great deal. If you, in the Greek language, where you have he, she, and it, you only have one word in Greek for he, she, and it. In other words, they have I, you. In English, we have I, you, he, she, and it. All right, in Greek, they only had the one. They had a word for I, a word for you, and then one for he, she, or it. And you have to take the context to know how to translate it. Now, they translated it he. When obviously it's not he at all. It's talking about love. It says that you stir not up nor awake my love until it please. It's the love. Now, the key to this is you can't force love. There's no way that you can force love. There have been people that's tried to force love since Adam and Eve, I guess. You know, there's been the habitual lovemakers. They look out and they see this gal and they see this guy, and there's no reason in the world why they can't see that they wouldn't fall in love and live happily ever after. So they get them together. And she looks at him, he looks at her, and nothing happens. And so then, let's force it. Let's get them together. You can't force love. That's the point they're making. Mating love can't be forced. If somebody's wondering, how can I fall in love? How do I know when I fall in love? You won't have any problem. You know it. It's something that you can't force. Nobody can force it upon you. Dad and mom cannot tell a young girl, here's the boy you will love, or vice versa. It can't be forced. It's something that comes to pass as an attraction between the two sexes. And so she says then, don't force my love. Now at this time, it says, the voice of my beloved, behold, he cometh. Now she now is starting to daydream. She's thinking about being back home and what would happen if she's back home. She said, oh, I can just hear the voice of my beloved. He comes leaping upon the mountains and skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a roe or a young hart. See, just a country boy. All the kid knows how to do is run over a mountain. But that's all she wants. That's what she's in love with. She said, behold, he standeth behind our wall. He looketh in at the windows. He glanceth through the lattice. He's come to the house now and he's playing peekaboo. He's knocking, probably running around the house, you know, playing hard to get. And she said, I can just see it. I can just, oh, she just thrilled. My beloved spake to me and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Now she's daydreaming. She's here in Solomon's house. You have to remember that. Solomon has her captive. And she's lying there. And as she's lying there, she can just see her sweetheart running over the hills, coming up to the house, knocking, running around there, and then whispering through the window, rise up. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past and the rain is gone, over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth and the time of the singing of the bird is come. What happens to a young man's fancy in the spring? Here's the springtime. Come on, honey. It's spring. I've come to get you. I've come back. Now she's just dreaming this. She's just thinking this, see. And said, the voice of the turtle dove is heard in the land. The fig tree ripened her green figs. And the vine are in blossom. They give forth their fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, come away. O, my dove, thou art in the cleft of the rock, in the covert of the steep place. Let me see thy countenance. Let me hear thy voice. For sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. Now I want you to notice what she is hearing her boyfriend say. Instead of Solomon over here in all of his dignity and majesty, saying, oh, darling, you're as pretty as a stallion. I'll give you gold with silver mounted in it. You're the most beautiful thing. Your eyes are like doves. What she sees this boy of hers coming, he has a different attitude toward her. Come and share the spring with me. I can't enjoy the spring unless you're here. The flowers are starting to bud and the weather's changing and the birds are singing, and I can't enjoy it. Because I can't enjoy anything unless you're my constant companion. And then he tells her in verse 14, she hears him say this. She knows this is what he thinks. O, my dove, thou art in the cleft of the rock, in the covert or secrets of the steep place, let me see the countenance. Let me look at you. That's all I ask. You're the most beautiful thing in all the world. Let me hear thy voice. I just want to hear you talk. What you mean to me is, if I can look at you, and if I can hear you talk, for thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. You don't have to have gold on you to make you pretty. We're not going to have to go out and redress you so that you can become beautiful. All I want is to be with you, and to be able to see you and hear you talk. And that is what thrills me on the inside. Then she chides him. Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom. She knows if she could just be back there and help him with those vineyards, shoo those little foxes away, that's the thrill that she would rather have. She'd rather be in the vineyard chasing foxes from eating grapes than to be in the great courts of Solomon with all of his splendor. She said, "My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feedeth his flock among the lilies, until the day be cool and the shadows flee away. Turn, my beloved, and be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of Bethel." So she says, "He is mine, and I am his. I may be in this court, and Solomon may have me captive. But I want the world to know that I belong to that man. And that man belongs to me, because there is a force that is mightier than gold. There's a force that is mightier than all the powers of all the kings on earth. And that force is something that God instilled within man, and that is mating love." And so she tells him, "Don't come and become a Solomon, but turn and be like a young roe. Turn and run over the hills. You be my country boy." That's what I fell in love with. Young girls, don't pick you out a good-looking guy and then say, "I'll marry him and then I'll change him." You're not going to change him, first of all. And secondly, if you don't like him the way he is, don't marry him. That's what this is teaching. You don't have to be in competition with Solomon. You don't have to come and be like he is. Just turn and be like a deer. Be a country boy. Run over the mountains. That's the guy that I fell in love with. And this happens so oftentimes, and it's a weakness of young girls not realizing this. You fall in love with a fella, and if you marry him, you marry him for what he is now. That's probably what he's going to be forever. There's an old saying, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy. And this little girl didn't try. So don't you go out and get some country boy that is big and handsome and just knocks you off of the feet physically and say, "I'll take him to town and I'll dress him up and I'll make him this way." Don't be a fool. You'll have an unhappy marriage. If you like that country boy, it's a country boy, you marry a country boy, and that's what you're going to have the rest of your life. If you don't like country boys and you like city boys, then you marry a city boy. But you go through the years of courtship. You get to know the individuals. And you have this mating love so that when you stand and you say, "I do," you don't have something in the back of your mind, a little secret saying, "I do, but I'll start changing him tomorrow." When you say, "I do," it means, "I do. I'm taking him as he is. And there's no force on this earth that is stronger than this mating love." Well, we'll have to stop our play right here and continue on next week. Just pick up where we started and go ahead and try to finish what is a beautiful story and a lot of beautiful ideas and beautiful thoughts that are incorporated within it. Should there be one in our audience today that realizes that your life is not in harmony with God's will, should you need to be washed in the precious blood of His Son, would you let that be known as we stand and as we sing the first stanza of this song.